Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into someone you probably think you know really well, Lisa Kudrow.
That's right. And for most people, she is Phoebe Buffay, isn't she? That, you know, wonderfully quirky guitar-strumming character from Friends.
Absolutely iconic. But the sources we've pulled together, they paint a much, much richer picture. We're talking about someone with a surprising background in, believe it or not, academic science.
And not just science, but then this pivot into really physical comedy. And later, these very profound roles as an executive producer. She's way more than just Phoebe.
So that's our mission today, right?
Yes.
For you listening, we want to move past that, well, that caricature, hilarious as it is, and really understand Kudrow as this multi-talented force.
Definitely. She's a primetime Emmy winner, yes, but also, you know, a critically acclaimed dramatic actress in her own right. And maybe most surprisingly, a really sophisticated creator and producer who basically took the reins of her own career.
Yeah, she took control. Our deep dive today is built on, well, a pretty comprehensive look at her life and career timeline. We're going from her studies at Vassar all the way through to her latest work, which is getting really good reviews.
And just to kick things off, here's that initial, like, shock factor fact we found. Before acting was even a serious thought, her plan was biology.
Right, specifically studying headaches.
Right.
Like her dad.
Exactly. Following in her father's footsteps to become a headache specialist, it just, it really sets the stage for how unexpected her whole journey is.
Headache expert. I mean, it's hard to square that with Phoebe Buffay sometimes. The person who gave a smelly cat was ready to dive deep into neurological research.
It's a fascinating contrast, isn't it? So let's unpack that. Let's trace that path from the biology lab to the improv stage.
Okay, so the academic background first. She was born Lisa Valerie Kudrow right here in Los Angeles, 1963.
And she went to Vassar College. That's in Poughkeepsie, New York, a pretty prestigious school.
And she got her AB, her Bachelor of Arts, in biology. So this wasn't just, like, dabbling.
No, not at all. This was a serious academic pursuit. As you said, the original plan was to follow her dad, Dr. Lee Kudrow. He was a doctor, a specialist in headaches.
And Lisa intended to become an expert in that same field.
That was the goal. And what really underscores how serious she was about it is that she actually worked for her father for 8 years.
8 years. Even while she was starting to try and break into acting.
Yes, yeah, simultaneously. And this wasn't just, you know, filing papers or something. She was involved in his research. She actually earned a research credit on one of his published studies.
Okay, we need the details on that study because, like you said, it speaks volumes about her early mindset, that analytical approach.
Right. The paper was called Handedness and Headache. It was looking into whether left-handed people were more likely than right-handed people to develop a specific type of headache called cluster headaches.
Cluster headaches.
Oh.
Those sound rough. And handedness. Why? Look at that.
Well, cluster headaches are notoriously painful, sometimes called suicide headaches, apparently, because the pain is just that intense. They happen in cycles, clusters. Okay. And handedness, it's often used in research as a sort of proxy for brain organization,
yep.
You know, differences between the left and right hemispheres. So they were exploring if that neurological difference indicated by being left-handed might correlate with getting these severe headaches.
So she's deep in this world of analyzing patterns, neurological details, human discomfort. It's very systematic. Very observational.
Exactly. That's the key, I think. She was thinking in systems, analyzing data, before comedy was even really on the table.
Which makes the pivot even more interesting. How does that analytical mind then jump into something like, well, the Groundlings, improv comedy?
It started, as these things often do, with a nudge from a friend. Or rather, a friend of her brother's.
The John Lovitz connection.
That's the one. John Lovitz, the comedian, was a childhood friend of her older brother. And apparently he was the one who urged her to try comedy.
And that led her to the Groundlings in L.A.
Yep. The legendary improv and sketch comedy school. That's where she started really learning the craft.
Improv seems like such a different skill set from biology research, though. So spontaneous.
But think about it. Good improv requires intense observation, right? You have to read your scene partners, read the audience, spot patterns in the humor, synthesize information instantly.
Okay. I see that. It's like high-speed data analysis, but for laughs.
Exactly. And she actually credits her improv teacher there, a woman named Cynthia Seghetti, as being hugely influential. Kudrow said Seghetti changed her whole perspective on acting, called her the best thing that happened on so many levels.
So that improv training was really foundational.
Absolutely. Especially, you know, considering the kind of improvised format she'd later create herself, like web therapy, that Groundlings experience was crucial.
But it wasn't an overnight success story, even with that training. there were some pretty significant near misses along the way.
Oh, yeah. Two really big ones that could have changed everything. First, she auditioned for Saturday Night Live back in 1990.
Wow, SNL. Who got the spot instead?
Julia Sweeney was chosen that year. So, close but no cigar on that one.
And the second one is maybe even more famous, the Frasier situation.
Right. This is wild. She was originally cast as Roz Doyle in the pilot episode of Frasier.
Roz Doyle, Perry Gilpin's role, that's a huge part. Very different from Phoebe, too. Much more sort of sharp and cynical.
Totally different vibe. And apparently it didn't click during rehearsals. Kudrow herself admitted later that she knew it wasn't working.
Really? She felt it wasn't right.
Yeah, she said, I could feel it all slipping away and I was panicking, which only made things worse. They ended up recasting the role during the pilot taping.
Wow. That must have been tough. But also incredibly self-aware of her to recognize it wasn't the right fit, even amidst the panic.
It shows that analytical side again, doesn't it? Assessing the situation, her own performance, even under pressure, she understood why it wasn't working.
And maybe that experience helped steer her towards the kind of quirky observational characters where she really excelled.
Seems likely, because the role that did stick, her first recurring TV role, was Ursula Buffet.
Ah, yes. The genesis of the Buffet dynasty. It's crucial to remember Ursula came first.
Absolutely. People forget that. Ursula Buffet, the kind of spacey, definitely eccentric waitress on Mad About You, that was her first regular gig starting in 1993.
She was in quite a few episodes of that, wasn't she?
Yeah, 24 episodes between 93 and 99. So Ursula was established. She was out there. People knew the character.
And then Friends comes along in 1994. They cast Kudrow as Phoebe.
And they make that brilliant decision to connect the dots. They decided Ursula and Phoebe would be identical twin sisters.
Which is just genius, really. It instantly gives Phoebe this built-in, slightly strange backstory. Explains some of her, let's say, unique perspectives on life.
Totally. Having Ursula as her twin provides this context for Phoebe's sort of chaotic upbringing and her detachment sometimes. It grounds the eccentricity in something specific.
And Phoebe Buffay just exploded, became this global icon almost overnight. What was it about Kudrow's performance that hit so hard?
I think it was the combination of genuine warmth and complete, utter strangeness delivered with total conviction. She wasn't playing Phoebe as dumb.
No, definitely not dumb.
Yeah.
Just operating on a different wavelength.
Exactly. A different internal logic. And Kudrow committed to that logic, absolutely. Whether she was singing Smelly Cat or talking about her, you know, questionable past, she played it with this core of sincerity. Critics really picked up on that intellectual commitment behind the quirkiness.
And that massive success, the whole Friends phenomena, led to that incredible negotiating power for the cast.
Oh, yeah. Unprecedented at the time. The six of them together, they basically changed how stars got paid in television.
We're talking the famous $1 million per episode deal.
So the 9th and 10th seasons, yeah.
Yeah.
Kudrow, Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox, they became the highest paid TV actresses ever at that point. It was a huge statement about the value they brought to the show.
And a little bit of trivia, she was actually the oldest of the main six cast members.
She was. And interestingly, she was also the first one of the Friends cast to win an Emmy for her role.
Really? Before the others?
Yep. She won Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series back in 1998. So that critical recognition came relatively early for her specific contribution.
While all this Friends madness is happening, she's also making some really interesting choices in her film career, not just coasting on the Phoebe fame.
Not at all. She was clearly using the security Friends gave her to explore different things, balancing these like broader comedies with more character-driven stuff.
Like Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Yeah.
That's become such a cult classic.
Totally. Perfect use of her deadpan timing opposite Mira Sorvino. But then just a year later, she does the opposite of Sex.
Ah, okay. That's the one that really made critics sit up and take notice, right? Showed a different side entirely.
Absolutely. It was a comedy drama, quite dark and cynical in tone. She played Lucia, this very sharp-tongued, somewhat repressed woman. It was miles away from Phoebe.
And the performance was really well received.
Hugely. She won the New York Film Critics Circle Award for Best Supporting Actress. That's a major critical prize. Plus an Independent Spirit Award nomination. It proved she had serious dramatic chops and wasn't just going to be typecast.
So she's doing mainstream comedies like Analyze This and its sequel?
Right, with De Niro and Billy Crystal. And voice work like Dr. Dolittle 2, keeping her hand in big studio films.
But also getting these serious critical nods for indie films. She's building this really diverse portfolio during the Friends years.
Precisely. Setting the stage, really, for what came next. Because when Friends ended in 2004, she didn't just, you know, take a long vacation or keep doing supporting roles.
No, this is where that control element really kicks in, the power shift.
Exactly. That $1 million-an-episode paycheck wasn't just money. It was freedom. Creative freedom. She immediately pivoted towards creating, writing, and producing her own material.
Which brings us to the comeback. HBO, 2005. This feels like a defining moment.
It absolutely is. The comeback. She co-created it, co-wrote it, and starred as Valerie Cherish, a truly unforgettable character.
Valerie Cherish. The washed-up sitcom actress trying to reignite her career via reality TV. It's painfully brilliant.
Painful is the word. It's this incredibly sharp, often uncomfortable satire about fame, desperation, and the horror of early reality television.
It feels like her science background is back in play here, doesn't it? Observing human behavior under the microscope of the camera.
Totally. It's like she's conducting an experiment on celebrity narcissism.
Yeah.
Using that mockumentary format, the camera's always there, always unflinching to just observe Valerie's unraveling. Its sociological study is cringe comedy.
But it didn't quite land with audiences initially, did it? Only one season back in 2005.
No, it was. It was maybe too ahead of its time. Too raw, too meta, perhaps. Reality TV was still kind of finding its feet, and maybe audiences weren't ready for a show that implicated them in the exploitation.
So it got canceled after that first run.
Yep. Which must have been disappointing. But the story doesn't end there, which is crucial.
Right. The revival. This is what cemented its legacy.
Exactly. 9 years later, nine. HBO brought the comeback back in 2014 for a second season.
And by then, the culture had caught up. People got it.
Completely. It was hailed as this masterpiece. Critics adored it. And it really resonated because by 2014, we were all deep in that reality TV culture Valerie was navigating back in 2005.
And it's not even done yet, right? There's talk of more.
There is. A third season was announced, supposedly for 2026. So Valerie Cherish lives on. And importantly, this work finally got her Emmy nominations as a lead actress in a comedy series. Twice.
That's a significant shift. From supporting on Friends to lead actress and creator on her own acclaimed show.
A huge leap. And while she was doing the comeback, she was also pioneering something else entirely. Web content.
Web therapy.
Yeah.
Okay, this started online, right?
Right.
Way before streaming was the norm.
Yeah. Launched back in 2008 on elstudio.com. It was an improvised web series she co-created and starred in. Super innovative for the time.
And the format was key here. These really short therapy sessions.
That was the genius of it. She played Fiona Wallace, this therapist who offered patients therapy sessions over iChat. Remember iChat? But only for 3 minutes.
3 minutes. That's the whole joke, isn't it? The absurdity of trying to do therapy that quickly.
Exactly. It's inherently comedic. Fiona's total lack of patience or self-absorption crammed into this impossible time limit, it forced incredible improvisational discipline from Kudrow and her guest stars.
Just get another analytical exercise, almost. Setting a strict parameter to the three-minute rule and seeing what comedic chaos results.
Totally. It's observational comedy about impatience and professional arrogance. And it worked. It got Webby nominations. Kudrow won a Webby for her performance.
And it got picked up by Showtime eventually.
Yeah, they reformatted it into a regular half-hour show that ran from 2011 to 2015. It showed she could create this lean, innovative format online and then scale it up for premium cable. Very savvy.
So she's creating these edgy comedies, but her producing work goes beyond fiction too, right?
Yeah.
Into something quite serious and historical.
Yes. Through her production company, Is or Isn't Entertainment, she's the executive producer for the U.S. version of that genealogy show, Who Do You Think You Are?
Oh, right. Where celebrities trace their family histories.
Exactly. And her work producing that show has been really well regarded. It's earned 5 Emmy nominations for Outstanding Structured Reality Program.
And she didn't just stay behind the camera for that one. She actually participated as a subject.
She did in the very first series. And that led to this incredibly profound and quite tragic personal discovery.
This connects back to her family background.
Deeply. Through the research for the show, she found out that her paternal great-grandmother, she was murdered during the Holocaust.
Oh, wow. That's incredibly heavy.
Yeah. Her family came from a village called Ilya, which is now in Belarus, and the records showed that almost all the Jewish residents of Ilya, including her great-grandmother, were killed by the Nazis.
Discovering that on camera while producing the show, I can't even imagine.
It must have been devastating. But it also gives her work on that show such a deep personal resonance. It's not just celebrity ancestry. It's about uncovering these vital, often painful historical truths.
It definitely puts her commitment to that show, and maybe to finding substance in her projects generally, into a different light.
Absolutely. It connects her analytical side, that need for truth and documentation, directly to her own family's history and this immense historical trauma. It really grounds her work.
So, moving towards more recent years, she hasn't stopped working or showing that range. Mm-hmm. She keeps popping up in really interesting supporting roles.
Definitely. She has this great ability to just slot into an ensemble and deliver something memorable. Think of her in Easy A.
Yeah, the guidance counselor.
Or as the university dean in Neighbors and its sequel. Just really solid comedic supporting turns, but then also things like The Girl on the Train.
Right, the thriller. That was a very different register for her.
Sure.
Straight drama, quite dark.
Exactly. No real comedy there. It showed she could still access that purely dramatic side effectively.
And she's done some great guest spots on TV, too.
Her role in The Good Place was fantastic. Playing Hypatia of Alexandria, or Patty, required that perfect blend of intellectual weight and the show's specific comedic sensibility.
And Space Force with Steve Carell.
Yep, playing Maggie Naird, his incarcerated wife. Plus, she's doing voice work now as Honey the Dog on the animated show Housebroken.
It seems like even when nostalgia calls, like with the Friends reunion, she maintains that producer's perspective.
Good point. She was an executive producer on Friends, the reunion in 2021, so she had a hand in shaping how that massive cultural moment was presented, not just showing up as Phoebe.
She's also involved in that game show, 25 Words or Less.
Yeah, she's an executive producer on that too, and often appears as a celebrity guest. It
yeah.
shows she's still very much involved in the mechanics of television production, not just performing.
And most recently, she starred in a new Netflix show.
That's right. No Good Deed, a comedy drama that came out in December 2024. She played the main role, Lydia Morgan, and got really positive reviews for it. Critics highlighted the complexity and restraint in her performance.
So, 3 decades after Friends started, she's still headlining shows and getting critical acclaim for challenging roles. That's pretty remarkable staying power.
It really is. No sign of slowing down or becoming irrelevant.
Let's circle back to her personal life for a moment, because it intersected so directly with Friends in a way that's quite unique.
You mean her pregnancy?
Yeah. She married Michael Stern, a French advertising executive, back in 1995.
And their son, Julian, was born in May 1998.
And rather than trying to hide her pregnancy on Friends with, you know, big coats or laundry baskets,
they wrote it in probably one of the most memorable and frankly, bizarrely sweet storylines the show ever did.
Phoebe becoming a surrogate for her half-brother, Frank Jr., and his wife, Alice, carrying their triplets.
It was such a wild idea, but it worked. It allowed Kudrow's real life to become part of the show, and it gave Phoebe this incredible arc of responsibility and, altruism amidst all the usual quirkiness.
It really deepened the character, didn't it? It showed a different dimension.
Absolutely, and it speaks to the kind of collaborative, maybe even family atmosphere on that set, that they could integrate something so personal, so seamlessly.
She's also been quite open, especially in recent years, about some of the personal struggles she faced during that intense Friends period.
Yeah, particularly about body image. In 2019, she revealed she'd experienced body dysmorphic disorder while she was on the show.
Wow. That must have been incredibly difficult, dealing with that internally while being one of the most famous faces on the planet.
You imagine the pressure, the constant scrutiny. For her to talk about BDD openly, it was pretty brave and probably helpful for a lot of people. It really contrasts with that carefree image Phoebe projected.
And just to reinforce that point about her heritage and the who do you think you are discovery.
Yeah. It feels central, doesn't it? Being raised in a middle-class Jewish family, having a bat mitzvah, knowing her ancestors came from Belarus.
And then finding out about her great-grandmother's murder in the Holocaust. It's not just ancestry. It's bearing witness to history.
Exactly. And she's talked about how that discovery gave her a different perspective, a need to ensure those stories, those histories, are treated with seriousness and authenticity. It fuels that drive for substance you see in her producing work.
So when you pull it all together, I mean, the journey is kind of staggering.
Yeah.
From biology researcher focused on headaches.
To improv comedy star, global icon with Phoebe.
And then reinventing yourself as this creator, writer, producer of really challenging, critically lauded work, like The Comeback and Web Therapy.
It's a testament to this relentless intellectual curiosity, I think, and a refusal to be boxed in by that one incredibly famous role.
That analytical mind, the one studying handedness and headaches, it feels like it never switched off. It just changed its subject matter.
I completely agree. She applied the same observational rigor to dissecting human behavior, First through the lens of eccentric comedy with Phoebe, and then through the much sharper satirical lens of Valerie Cherish or Fiona Wallace.
And what's really striking is how she used the power friends gave her. Not just the money, but the influence. She didn't play it safe.
No, she invested it literally and figuratively in making the things she wanted to make. Things that were risky, unconventional, things that maybe wouldn't have gotten made otherwise. She took control of the narrative.
Which brings us to our final thought for you, the listener, to sort of chew on.
What does it really tell us about success, or maybe about creativity, when someone like Lisa Kudrow, who clearly had the chops for serious scientific research, publishing work on cluster headaches, takes that same analytical brain,
that skill for detailed observation,
and applies it instead to comedy, specifically to creating characters like Valerie Cherish or Fiona Wallace, who are themselves these intense studies in human behavior, vanity, and dysfunction?
Is there less distance between the scientist observing phenomena and the comedian observing human absurdity than we think? It feels like with Kudrow, that analytical engine was always running, just pointed in different directions.
A fascinating question to ponder.
Indeed. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the surprisingly complex world of Lisa Kudrow. We'll see you next time.